Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And now I'm doing these interviews from a stand-up desk, which I'm not here to like talk endlessly about the stand-up desk, but I am here to tell you the freaking lights are still too bright for this positioning. Now that I understand how lights should be, it drives me nuts that these lights are not perfect. I want them just right. But I'm going to have to hire somebody to come in and adjust them. That's how obsessed I am with the lights. And for no reason, Daniel. Most people are listening to the audio version. They don't watch it, but it upsets me.
If they're not watching it, they're missing out on 50% of the sex appeal of the show.
Right, including like the thing that's over your shoulder, which I'm going to talk about.
I was talking about you.
Oh, that too, of course. Look at me. I'm showing more chest hair lately, right? Wearing the V-necks like you.
Sure, baby. Very.
And in this interview, we're going to talk to Daniel De Piazza. He is a second-time Mixergy guest. We're going to talk about how he built his business, which is called Rich 20-something. It's a platform for millennials to master their money and mindset. Basically, he teaches millennials through articles, videos, courses, and live events how to, you know, have the financial life that they want. We're talking about freelancing, organizing their money, etc. And we're going to talk about that thing that's over his shoulder, which is a new book. Congratulations, Daniel.
Thank you.
It's called Rich 20-something, Ditch Your Average Job, Start an Epic Business, and Score the Life You Want. And it's available May 2nd. This interview is sponsored by the company that will help you hire your next great developer. It's called Top Tal, and by the company that's allowing us to book, well, now webinars with people. I'll tell you more about them later, but for now, they're called Acuity Scheduling. Daniel, let's talk about money.
Okay, sure.
How much are you bringing in with this site that's essentially a blog with courses? And I know there's much more to the substance of it, but the software is pretty basic. How much are you bringing in annually?
We just passed the $1 million threshold, which is why we're having this conversation.
Do you feel insulted by me and my process, or did you? Because first of all, Andrea got my email from you out of my inbox, and she sent you a message back saying, "Tell me more about the business. Do you really have any money?" Did that? Let's start with that. Did that feel a little insulting that she picked it up and then she was questioning your money?
No, you know, look here to give some context. I came home from the gym today and I talked to my girlfriend. I said, what's the quietest room that I can have this interview in? Because I'm doing it with Andrew Warner and he doesn't fuck around. So like I have a very serene space right now. You're very particular about what you want for your show. It's your show. I understand the criteria. I'm not insulted. I'm here to do business, man.
All right. And the business is sell the book. All right. How about this? I feel like you wanted the interview to go up before the book was published, before it came out, and my freaking schedule didn't allow it, and it was a little rude of us to have gone through a pre-interview process with you and then publish afterwards. Are you pissed at that? Be honest.
I'm not actually pissed, and here's why.
First but you of all, were, weren't you?
A little bit, but let me to give the full story. I realize that the book itself is more than the book launch. If you get too wrapped up in, oh, I got to get everything out the first week or this first and second week, you miss the point, which is that the book is something that's going to live on. And if I spent 3 years writing this, I'm going to spend a long time promoting it. So whenever this comes out, I'm happy.
All right. That's, you know what? There are very few authors who feel that way. Most authors publish the book and then they're done after like, let's say 2 or 3 months. Simon Sinek, the author of Why? I think that was the name of the book, right?
Start with why.
Exactly. Yes. Good memory on that. He was one of the few authors that I reached out to after he published his book. I just said, people are talking about this. I want to understand it. He didn't need to sell more books, but he still believed in his message so much that even though I didn't have a huge audience at the time, it's grown since then. He said, I'm coming on. And I always admire that. And I appreciate you being here. And we'll do whatever we can to get this up fast on the site. You're making a lot of money with this site. Congratulations, first of all. Thank you. And second, where's the revenue coming from? What exactly are you selling?
Well, right now we have four courses, and two of them we call flagship courses. And this is they started from a very obvious and almost like no-brainer position from my end. We started making courses 2 years ago, and they're the result of people asking me over and over and over again to lay out the steps that I've been writing about. And so essentially what happened was I was writing about my own freelance experiences on the blog. I did everything from – I started off with test prep. I was teaching SAT and ACT, so very far away
from – We're going to go deep into what you did before, but just like as a high-level overview, it's the courses where the revenue is coming
from,
right?
It's all courses right now. Well, all it's courses, live events, and we're working in some like one-on-one stuff too.
So on your site, rich20something.com/courses, freelance domination, it's going to teach people how to be, how to create an effective, profitable freelance business. That's one of them. Start up from the bottom. That's the other one. That's a step-by-step blueprint for launching and scaling your own online business. That's, those are the two big courses. The live events are bringing in something, but my sense is it's more about connecting with your people, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Like, this whole thing that you were talking about, Kaplan, did you actually do well in the SATs? That's why you were teaching at Kaplan?
I'm really good at picking between four bubbles.
No, that's tough. You know what? I'm laughing it off like, haha, it's easy. No, I remember the SATs. For me, they were tough. They really forced me to learn the language in a way that I didn't before. I used to drive into school listening to SAT vocabulary tapes, you know, or whatever. It wasn't tapes, but you know what I mean. What, you were good at it? You actually scored how much on your SATs?
1390, which is pretty good.
Okay, out of what, 1600?
1600, yeah.
Okay, all right. And so you went in and you taught at Kaplan, and they were paying you how much an hour?
Paying me 18 an hour.
And one day you looked down and you saw a flyer that said what?
It was $100 an hour for me to be there at that house.
They were charging $100 to have you go to someone's house, and they were only giving you 18% of that.
Is that not crazy? Does that not sound crazy to you? It sounds a little crazy to me. Not really, because of the way business works, but at the time, I was enraged.
Were they training you or anything like that?
I mean, they trained me. So there definitely is that component of it. And I don't overlook that. And that, in fact, that training helped me to launch my own business because I knew how to teach it. But at the time, my thought was, if the skill is worth $18 to them, but $100 to the families, there's a disparity.
I see. And what did that make you realize about life?
Well, it just made me realize that you don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate, you know?
I see. Did you go back and negotiate with them?
I didn't, because I just negotiated my way out of the job and worked for myself.
I see. But before you ended up working for yourself, you went to Atlanta, right? And you wanted to be an actor.
You know my story.
We have a good pre-interview and research team here that helps. I'm so surprised when I think of you to think of an actor. And frankly, why Atlanta of all places?
Oh, no, man. You're behind. Atlanta is a hotbed right now. Atlanta is like, they have several different studios there. Screen Gems is out there. Tyler Perry is out there. Paramount has a studio out there. And basically what they'll do is they'll do primary casting in LA and New York, and then they'll fill up all the rosters with places like Atlanta, New Orleans, Michigan, because they have great tax incentives. So you can get a lot of major roles there, and it's a good strategy to work your way up there because you can get an agent there and start getting some major roles there.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, instead of getting your way to the top and getting a TV show, you were at Longhorn Steakhouse. What's that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's, you have to if you're an actor. You must work at a restaurant. It is compulsory. It's mandatory.
Because the hours are good and it's easy to get a job and you can move on if you need to and start fast if you need to.
It's also just stereotypically perfect.
Yeah, right.
That's the main reason. But you're right. It is flexible and the hours are good and you can make decent money compared to, you know, working at a variable or a standard rate job. It's very variable. You know, you can influence a little bit more how much you bring in.
Okay. And then something happened with what's a butterball?
You don't know what a butterball is? You've probably eaten before. Well, look.
You know what? I didn't even know what tater tots were until a few years ago. I grew up in New York. No place sold tater tots.
What?
Until then, fancy places started selling tater tots like for
store,
$20.
Man.
Bucks.
Oh, you missed out on them. You missed out on butterballs and tater tots. Okay. Look, first of all, Think about the South. Have you ever traveled down South, like Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, all those places?
No.
Yeah.
I've been to some of the places you mentioned, but not all of them.
Yeah. Okay. So in the South, like, first of all, you have to understand, like, comfort food is a huge thing. So I had to lay out these, like, there's like 10 trays of these butters I had to scoop before the shift started, because we had to make sure that everyone was accommodated and accounted for before they came in. So we wouldn't have to do it during
the
shift.
It's a scoop of butter.
Scoop of butter.
Scoop of butter, like an ice cube?
We're talking like maybe 2 to 3 tablespoons. So like I would say a quarter of a scoop of ice cream. Pretty big. Pretty big. So I'm scooping all these butter balls into these ramekins. And of course, you know, at the time I'm 20 years old, I'm scooping them in. I don't have that much due diligence with the way I'm scooping these things, but I'm doing a pretty good job. It's butter. My manager comes up behind me and he's looking at the shape and the construction, the constitution of these balls. Pause. Okay. And he says, you know, I'm not satisfied with this. I'm not happy with this. Scoop them all over again. At that point, I scooped about 450, 460. And this is a really, I've told the story a few times now. And so thinking back to it now, I feel like it's almost a dumb story because it seems so stupid and simple. But at the time, I was enraged. I'm like, I'm not even doing good enough for you to satisfy your requirements for a basic, like a rote task. This is a problem for you. Well, then this is a problem for me. And so I immediately started to think to myself, what can I do that's going to leverage something I have up here rather than just doing this thing all day?
That's when okay. And that's when you said, look, I was good at teaching SAT work. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was $100 an hour good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start a business around that. And that's what you wanted to do.
Well, that's not the immediate bridge. The immediate bridge was, what do I have? I ran a skill inventory and found that. I pulled that out of my memory. And then I started off, doing the SAT thing.
SAT in person.
Mm-hmm.
Getting customers, how?
Getting customers by finding who already had my customers, rather than having to worry about put an ad in Craigslist, go to the community bulletin board. That doesn't work. So I looked online and I looked to see who already had my customers. I think to myself, who's my customer? Well, it's not really the students. The students in high school aren't the ones paying. It's the parents. So where are parents already going? Well, we know that in a lot of major cities, they have private test prep or private like consultants that help students to get into these Ivy League schools. When I was teaching Kaplan, I remembered this, and I remember that they would have these helicopter moms would basically get every single thing they could get covered for their students, so that the essays were tight. It's basically like a concierge for getting into Yale and Harvard. But the only thing that these consultants don't do is they don't actually teach the material. They can only bring the pieces together for you. You have to outsource that. You have to bring someone else in, like Kaplan or Princeton Review. So I went to these consultants and I said, look, you have all these parents. They're freaking out. It's really important for them to get their students these things for college. Rather than sending your clients to Kaplan and saying, hey, go work on your score, just send them to me. Bring me in as almost like a white label, like just white label me. Just make me, bring me into your business. Say that I'm part of your business. I already have the pedigree from Kaplan, which means I'm in the top 95th percentile. So you know I can teach this. If you work with me and you bring me your clients, I'll bring you 50% of them. I'll give you 50% of the money. And that's such a good deal for them, especially knowing that I'd already done this before, that everyone I asked was instantly into it. And I went from zero clients to, you know, pretty much unlimited overnight.
I see. All right. And so you did well with this business and you were no longer being graded on your scooping abilities of butter.
Right.
And then you got bored and you said, okay, this is not going to get me to the big life. Right. And that's when you had an idea for a web design agency. Mm-hmm. Why web design? Did you have any web design skills?
No, I mean, you know, that's the thing too. I think a lot of people are so worried that, that they're held in prison by the skills they already have. So two things. One, get a skill if you don't have one, learn it, or figure out how you can leverage the fact that there's a need for it without having to learn the skill. So for me, I can fiddle around. If there's an issue, I can maybe tackle it with like WordPress. It's not really web design though. I looked online, I looked on what was at the time Elance, and I saw that there was so much demand for web design. And you know, pro tip, if you want to learn what skills are going to be really good and popular for you, especially with computers, online stuff, digital design, things like that, go on Upwork, which is what Elance now is called, and just see what people are asking for. See what types of jobs are being requested, and you'll probably see 100 different things that are possible learnable skills for you that you didn't know you could do. So anyway, I go on Elance. I see that web design is a huge demand. I don't have the skills for this, but what I have skills for, you know, from that I learned from the SAT thing, that I learned from acting class, okay, very valuable, is I can pitch. I can pitch. So I thought, what's a unique way I can pitch this skill? I don't have the design skills, remember. So I go on to Elance and I start filming these private YouTube videos. I say, hey, look, you need a website. I can get this done for you. I have a team. I'm like, I can get a team together. We can figure it out. I'm going to get this team together. So eventually, people started really responding to this because no one was doing video pitches at the time. And still, I think no one is.
Video pitch means what?
So it was like a 90-second, hi, this is Daniel. I see you have a specific need for a website. I can address that need. Let's get the ball rolling. Because I applied to jobs as a decoy to see what types of inquiries I would get from other web designers who wanted to do work. Does that make sense? I was doing some recon to see what the responses would be. And when I posted, hey, we need a WordPress site done, I got these generic pitches with people that were obviously sending out canned emails and just really, really bad pitches. So I thought this shouldn't be hard to rise above this crap. So I started doing 97, immediately establishing that connection with people. So I was a real face rather than someone else, rather than some generic robot. Also, there's a strong advantage to the fact that most people hiring on these job board sites are American or European, and most people doing the work are usually like East Asia or other countries that don't speak English at such a high level of proficiency. And so my fluency with English really helped to instill confidence in people that I could get the job done.
And the video helped show that. Totally. Did you send those videos via email to them, or did you do it via the freelance sites?
Directly into the platform. I just said, hey, here's my pitch. Hey, I see that you're working on this site. I created a quick 90-second video for you. It's not a canned response. I just want to talk to you and say hi. I look forward to talking to you more. Bye.
You know what? I found that those short videos are really helpful for letting people know that you've taken a moment to pause and that they're not automated, that you're not sending an automated response. And yeah. I mean for like potential customers who ask questions to just shoot. I try to keep it as short as possible because if it's a potential customer for me, they just want to know that I've actually taken the time to respond. And so 20 seconds is probably enough. We do it a lot with sponsors. We send them no more than a minute because I know that it's a drag sometimes for people to stop their day and watch these videos. If they're looking to hire someone, then they really want a process. Like they want a longer video. In fact, they would probably even like a Skype conversation just to get a sense of the person who's going to do the work. But the big takeaway from this is to use those videos more often. That's a great point. And so you didn't do the work yourself. You then went onto the freelance sites yourself and you had people do the work. You were basically project managing and being the relatable face that they could talk to. All right. Is that part of what you teach today?
You know, I don't actually teach that strategy. Well, no, that's a lie. We do teach it in freelance domination, but I try not to focus on it too much because, one, I think that it can be abused if you don't do it ethically. So if you're creating the illusion that you're going to handle something and then you're you don't have a grasp of it, it can hurt clients. So it needs to be done with measuring care.
Okay. All right. So I see that you were doing that. I see how that takes you into a whole other world. When did the blog start?
The blog started, I just actually looked at the registration because I wanted to see when our anniversary was. It started October 25th, 2012.
Wow. Okay. And was that to support this business or was it just to teach?
That was to vent. That was to vent. I've always been a writer, and it was a place for me to talk about what I was doing online and to almost do some self-reflection. And I didn't really have any understanding of internet marketing at that time. It was simply an echo chamber for a little bit. And
why call it Rich 20-something then if it's a venting platform?
I know it was aspirational, and I've gone through different phases where in the beginning I loved the name because I had no idea of what it would become. And then as it started to get traction, I was like, oh, why did I name it this? And now it's really official, so I can't change it.
But you know what? I'm looking at an early version of your site from December 2012. The homepage says, free course teaches you how to become a young millionaire. No college degree required.
Yeah. Yep. What about it?
That seems like more of a spammy business model already set up than a venting platform.
Well, that's true, and here's the reality. The Rich 20-something started as a separate site. I had another blog called DanielDiPiazza.com, and I
called
merged
what?
The two. DanielDiPiazza.com.
Ah, gotcha, yeah.
And I merged the two. Mostly I was writing on Daniel DiPiazza, and Rich 20 I was fiddling with, and close within within a 3 or 4 month period, I merged those two and just started writing on Rich 20.
Okay, I see. All right, let me take a moment here to talk about my sponsor. It's a company called Acuity Scheduling. Do you do any webinars with people, any partner webinars?
I do.
You do. And when you schedule how effective are partner webinars for you for getting customers before I get into this?
They are pretty effective depending on who the lead source is.
Depending on what?
Who the lead source is.
I see.
Yeah.
So I finally started doing them. I'm really crazy for this chatbot, and I know that if I want to introduce it to people, I can't just talk about it to my own audience.
Yeah.
I started partnering up with or asking people to partner up with me. And one of the challenges with that is how do you find a time where both sides can actually host the webinar together. I need to be available to do the webinar and teach it, but I also want the partner whose site I'm going to teach their audience about chatbots. I need him to be available then. And I don't want to have this back and forth with them that really ruins the professional relationship that we have, right? Where it's, hey, are you free next Monday? No, not next Monday. How about next Tuesday? Bah, bah, bah. You lose it all. And then once we do, I don't want that last minute to miss their phone number or for them to have to miss my backup phone number, right? I want it all to be professional and handled right, which is why I use Acuity Scheduling. Acuity Scheduling, for anyone who doesn't know, allows me to go to the site, acuityscheduling.com, and I connect it to my calendar. I pick the dates and times that I'm available, and then I select the questions. Actually, I handwrite the questions that I want to ask anyone who books with me. Then what I do that most people don't do is I take their embed code, I put it on my site so that their calendar looks like it's part of my site, and I end up with a page on my site that looks like a calendar that I built for my site that someone can come to and say, all right, here's Andrew's availability. I'll pick one of the times that works for me, and I'll book a partner webinar. That's the way we do it. And after they book, I ask them a few questions like, what's your name and phone number? And then I give them a link to put it on their calendar so people do not forget. If you're out there and you want to have partnerships like this, you need a tool to make it easier. If you want your customers to talk to you, you need a tool to make it easy for them to do it. I've talked to so many software entrepreneurs, especially, who are now encouraging their team to get on the phone with potential customers to do demos. That really helps close sales and helps the company understand what their customers are about. And I've talked to people who do it after someone buys so that they make sure that the software that the customer bought is actually being used at the company. There are lots of different reasons to use it, and one URL that will let you use it for free. It is this, make sure to write it down. It's acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. They'll give you a whole bunch of free time. By the way, Acuity spelled A-C-U-I-T-Y scheduling.com. All right. I see then where you're going with this. Did you ever hit up your audience and say, you guys can hire me? Is that where you got some of your early customers?
Hire me for what?
For anything. I see here that you're doing consulting while you were blogging. Was there ever a period where you said to your audience, look, hire me, or did you start with the course first?
So when I transitioned away from, this is now we're thinking, I'm thinking 2013, I just moved from Atlanta to Los Angeles. And at that time, I was thinking it was time to move on from the web design development, not because it wasn't good, but because I'm always trying to get more aligned with where I'm going. It's not that it's not a good business. It's just, I don't want to do this for too long because I have other bigger plans. And so at that point, I moved to consulting. But I wasn't necessarily just consulting the people who read my blog, because I was looking to find people who, well, one, honestly, were further along in the process so they could benefit from the more advanced stuff I'd learned, and also just could afford to pay. So at that point, I was looking for internet businesses who were doing at least 7 figures. And that's who I started with. And I started...
By reaching out to them?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first person that I ended up working with was Ramit Sethi, who you might know.
I do know him. I didn't realize that. Okay. He was your first client. How did you get Ramit to say yes to working with you?
I created a really awesome pitch. So he was looking for copywriters. He was looking for a junior copywriter. And
you're a good writer, so I could see why that would get him excited. Okay, so you just pitched him?
I didn't just pitch him. He asked for two things on the application. One was a case study article, for one of his courses, demonstrating as a fake student how great it was, right? You know, you understand that. And then the second one was a partnership article that he'd write for maybe Yahoo Finance or Biz Insider and write as him. So here's the two things I did that really, I think, crushed it. First, for the case study, I noticed that usually he had a picture of the person, right, that was doing the case study. And this is back in 2013 when things weren't as video friendly now, you know, WordPress was still moving along and we weren't all social media'd up. So I cloned his entire, like I cloned several pages of his site on my site using a custom WordPress drag and drop software to make my site or a portion of my site look exactly like his. So when I created the case study and I sent it, it looked exactly like he was reading it on his site rather than just send a Word doc, which I think most people would have done. So I created a clone of his site And in place of the picture, I pretended it was a woman, and I gave myself a wig. And I basically made up this fake person, and I went through all his case studies and just literally took the language and decoded it and used the exact same language in my case that he used in his, and just changed some numbers around and just molded it, right? So I created that. And then the second thing I did was for his partner articles, I probably read 70, 80 partner articles that he had online. And then I recreated Yahoo Finance with the same software. And even like paying attention to the font, the margins, the borders, the advertisements on the side, it looked just like something Ramit would write. And then I wrote that. And they told me once I got fired, which I'll tell you about that if you want. Once I got fired, they told me that it was so accurate that they had to check for several days to make sure I hadn't plagiarized it because it was so good.
To make sure you hadn't plagiarized something he already had written.
Right, because I was the first copywriter that they'd hired. One of the first.
And so because of that level of detail and that level of presentation, he hired you. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing once you say you work with Ramit, because he's so particular, because he's so detail-oriented, that helps you get other clients, right?
So, yeah, for sure.
Why did they fire you then?
They fired me because I just dropped the ball on some detail-oriented work. And I had a beef about that for a while, and I understand why. I understand, but look, me and Ramit are not friends. Me and his brother, Manish, are very close friends. We just have clashing personalities. At the end of the day, though, like it just wasn't a good fit. If I want to write my own books, I can't work for someone else.
So what's an example of something you dropped the ball on?
We were doing a launch in this is December of 13, I think. December of 13, we're doing a launch. And just a lot of critical things had to happen. And I guess I didn't get some of the pieces in on time. And they have a very distinct hierarchy with their management structure. And so they're very like org charted out. And to me, it didn't make sense that I couldn't just talk to Ramit about something. I had to go through a manager when there's only 30 people that work in the company. Like I can't get access to this guy, and I want to be able to like discuss things with him, but I have to go through the manager.
And you're supposed to write in his voice.
Right.
I see.
And so it was just, for me, it wasn't a good fit. And yeah, I dropped the ball on a few detail-oriented things for sure.
Okay. The big thing that got you really going was your own personal launch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the first product that you launched?
Well, the first product was Freelance Domination 1.0. It was the beta version. And that happened September 2014.
And how did you know what to put into that?
Well, you know, it got easier as I got more experience working on different businesses because I realized that these weren't random experiences, and they were valuable experiences that most people hadn't had. So I realized that as I was doing these things, like starting up with Kaplan, moving to web design, working with Ramit and other clients, as I was writing about this stuff, all of that was really unique experience, and it was knowledge other people didn't have. And so I started asking my audience, talking to them about what they wanted, and I'd already had so much traction writing about freelancing that I figured the next logical step was to make a more robust, augmented version of that.
What was your process for asking your audience what they needed to know?
Well, at the time, and still even to this day, but at the time even more so, I was extremely, extremely active with almost every member of my audience that responded to me on a first name basis. So at that time, in the comments of the blog, I was responding via video, sometimes with YouTube videos. I was replying to every single email. And so I would just ask people one-on-one, say, hey, I'm looking to build this. Is this something that you want? And people repeatedly said yes. And there are other ways to probably even validate better. But I think my initial validation was, look, I just came off the heels of working with Ramit, so I understand how courses work and how launches work. I have a pretty solid audience that time, like between 5,000 and 7,000 people. I think I can do something with this. And so I kind of just took what I had and kind of just went for it.
What did you learn from Ramit about how launches work?
I learned the level of detail that has to go into them. I got really good at the framework for structuring copy. Although I would say this, like leaving working at I Will Teach, I thought that I was a good entrepreneur, but I was really just a good copywriter marketer, which is different.
Tell me more about what that means. And then I want to get into specifics about the structure of copywriting or the details that you needed to be aware of.
Yeah. So I just thought that I was hot shit. And I thought that, and also because I had an email list that I'd grown and I did my first launch with it and it made decent money for me at the time. I made like 40K, and I was like, oh man, I am good at this. I am great at business. And what I've realized over the past 3 years after that is that you can have a successful product launch and still not know how to run a business because they're mutually exclusive. Just because you can send out an email that gets people to buy things doesn't mean that you know how to like manage the money inside of a business and also create a predictable, recurring, like sustainable business model that can hire people and do these things that businesses need to do to grow.
Tell me, I'm trying to understand. So you, what you did was you said, look, I need 5 emails to go out to my audience or some number, right? Do you remember what the number was?
It was 5. Well, consider that I had a pre-launch, right? So warming people up, getting people used to the idea, asking the audience, polling them, like getting a fervor going for about a week or two.
That's what the product launch formula, right?
Product launch formula.
You bought that course?
I have. I don't know when I bought it. I think I've seen a couple versions of it, but I think I was mostly going off of what I learned at I Will Teach, which I'm sure, but they integrate stuff from that too. We're all kind of, you know, piecing.
I do see a lot of people start off with not a plain Google Doc, but like the structure of product launch formula, which is like a set of bullet points. Each bullet point represents an email that needs to go out. That's part of the product launch formula. And as an overview of it, basically what we're saying is you ask the audience for feedback on what you're going to teach, right? You tell them you're thinking of teaching this. You then say, okay, I'm going to be selling this, and you pre-sell it before you actually create the course. And then you keep dripping out emails, and there's a set of emails that you knew to send out.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you got customers, they came to your site, they bought. What are the mistakes that you made with that?
Well, the first launch is always the hardest and most stressful. I obviously left a lot of money on the table because we didn't have any type of, and I was still figuring out pricing, but we didn't have any type of upsells. We had no types of downsells or offers later afterwards. And usually we find that we maximize profit a lot just by tweaking those factors. But then I think even the first launch we did, we only accepted via PayPal because I didn't understand how to like integrate different checkouts. So we lost a lot of money there, I'm sure. And then in terms of launch mistakes, thinking back to it, the webinar was not good. You know, it was too long and it was too much teaching, not really any selling because I was scared to sell, which is odd because I'm not generally scared to sell. So definitely rookie mistakes.
What did you use for your structure for the webinar?
I think I took what I'd learned from Ramit, plus I looked at some other people, what other people were doing, and I kind of just like, it was just too long. It was bloated. It was just like hundreds of slides. I don't know what I was doing. It was crazy.
Yeah. You know what? For product launch formula, there's a guy, Brian Harris now, who's essentially, do you know about his Slingshot product?
I do. Yeah.
All right. Slingshot essentially says, look, you don't want to go through the whole course. What you want is a schedule that tells you what emails to send out when and how to name your product and so on. And so it's software where you pick the date that you want to launch, and then it creates a project management, its own like project management software inside of Slingshot.
That's
and
cool.
Each step of your process is on a calendar, and on that calendar's date, you're told exactly what to write. And that essentially is not product launch formula, but a formula for launching a product. And I could see how people are starting with that. For webinars, I found David Siteman Garland's course to be fan-freaking-tastic. I had no idea how good he was at teaching it. He gives you a clear process. And the only reason I connected with him is I kept asking people, who does webinars the best? Who sells the most? And it's David Siteman Garland, who you'd never guess because the guy's just like a fun kind of hangout guy, you know?
Well, you know what, man? Everyone has their own process. I think you have to find what works for you. So, for instance, I see guys, like if you want to talk OG internet marketers, I see guys like Frank Kern. And I'm sure he's crushing, but he has his own thing that he does, right? Where he seems like he just has this like natural Georgia Southern draw, and he draws you in, and then all by the time 2 hours have passed, you feel like you watched a movie, you're taking out your wallet. You have guys like Russell Brunson, who I really like his stuff now, and he has this like his stack where he stacks the different type of value that you're getting. I'm using a lot of that now, and that works really well. It's been converting really well for us. So everyone has their own thing. I think it depends on who the presenter is too, because you have your own presentation style, you know?
Yeah, it's true. But it does help to have some framework in the beginning and some understanding of how long it goes, because I would never guess. I mean, meanwhile, that guy, Brian Harris, that guy's some kind of savant freak or something. I told him I wanted to do webinars. He always has a Google or an Evernote doc with notes for himself on anything that he's interested in. So he sent me an Evernote doc with webinars that he's watched and links to them. I think it had notes on those webinars. I don't know where this guy came from, but unreal what he has. And this is like his own personal stash of stuff. I think there's a note to himself to remember to go do something like go to the dentist in there. So it's not like he's publishing this publicly. He just says, here, this is how I studied it. Anyway, I love that level of detail that people in our world have.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I see how this thing works for you. It suddenly is starting to take off. The next step is, I'm assuming, to start to figure out how do you do this better after you teach the course, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what are the big things that you did better after you did the first one?
Well, I mean, after we did the first launch, I still didn't have a team. So I didn't really have any pressing obligation to go forward. Because you have to remember, fresh off of 2013, 14, I was still trying to figure out, is Rich 20-something a thing? Is it going to be like the next web design where I like make a little bit of money and then I just keep moving on to the next thing? Or am I going to make a home here? So I think if I'm being honest, 2014, I just did whatever I felt like doing. I didn't really have a structure or a plan. So I did improve the course then in January. We relaunched it. But even with improving the course, like I re-recorded slides, I made it look better. Like I made the back end much nicer. It was just much more well prepared. I still wasn't 100% sure that this would be anything more than like a really good side hustle, because I was still consulting at the time. I'm still working with, like, I was working with your friends, Art of Charm. I was working with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A bunch of other players in the field. And like, just, I was new to LA. So I was just getting out here and just meeting people. And I didn't know if it was going to be a thing, but we did eventually improve the course a few months later. And then at the end of 14, I was like, this is my business now. Okay. So I have to get serious.
See, yeah, you did a masterclass here for us at Mixergy, Start Your Freelance Business. And I have to be honest with you, I didn't know if you were the right person to teach it, because, you know, you can't tell who's got substance and who hasn't. We contacted people who took your program to understand, and people who knew you to understand, is this guy real or not? Does he actually have something? I'm going through my notes here. We might have checked in with like Manish. We checked in with some of your students. We just kept asking. I'm looking at a bunch of emails going back and forth from
that
a couple of years ago. And your stuff worked. And that's hard, frankly, right? Because the truth is that we're living in a world where it's very easy for someone who teaches a class to turn around and say, this works. It worked for me. It worked for these two other people who I have videos for. If it didn't work for you, you didn't work it. Right? And that's the easy answer. But I never use a piece of software where it doesn't work and the founder says, hey, you didn't work it right. Sometimes I do. Those guys are idiots.
Yeah.
Right? We improve based on that. So I'm curious about what you did to make this thing actually work. And you know what? Once you hold the answer to that for a sec, I have to tell people about TopTal. It's a company that helps you hire your next great developer. The reason I'm telling people about it now with such a ferocity is I'm going to interview very soon a founder who got into a heated battle with his co-founder. Heated. We're talking about lawyers, everything but knives and guns basically came out. Really successful company, but it was a painful experience. And the reason for that is, the reason he had the co-founder is he wanted someone really good to build his software with him, right? To build the software for his company. And it's hard to find that really good person. And said, you know what? If I hire someone, they're going to be a hired gun. They're not going to know much. And I'm going to have to tell them exactly what to do. I want someone who could think like an owner. And so he went and he brought someone on who was an owner. And that's not why you do it. You don't have to do that. If you're looking for a great developer who thinks like an owner, who thinks the way that you do, the best way to get them is to go to TopTal. One of the things that TopTal does is they talk to you to understand your temperament, the way you work, what you're looking for. And then the next thing is they go to their network and they find a match, someone who uses the software that you need, someone who has the same temperament as you, someone who's going to be available to you in the format that you want. Maybe it's Slack, maybe it's Asana. How do you communicate? Who can really jive with you? It's kind of like a marriage. And so that's what TopTal is about. That's why they want to talk to you before they get started. If you're looking for a developer, go check out not TopTal.com, but TopTal.com/Mixergy, because they are giving our audience something they're not giving anyone else. I should say it's top as in top of the mountain, tal as in talent. I know I, for some reason, pronounced that a little bit off. So TopTal.com/Mixergy. When you go there, you're going to see that Mixergy listeners are getting 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours, and that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. No-risk trial period, 2 weeks. Go check them out at toptal.com/mixergy.
All right, Daniel. That's a great deal.
Sorry?
That's a great deal, by the way.
Yeah, they really are fantastic with that. I just know that what it is that they're losing money in the beginning with clients, and then as they're definitely losing money with clients, and then as they continue to work, they know that you're going to keep working with their people and they'll make money with you over time. All right. But what did you do to improve your course? What did you do to make sure it actually worked?
You got to get feedback, man. I mean, you know, the first iteration of the course was, these are my conjectures on how to do this, on what might work for you. And then we just took student feedback. So one of the things we did was we included case studies throughout the course that made it a lot more relatable. We would use the material from the course with students. And like the first iteration of the course in 2014, I had a chance to work with a lot of students one-on-one. So basically what we did was we just took their success or sometimes their failures, and then we added it to the appropriate area of the course so people can see what it looked like in real life. Because there's this weird thing with online courses where you only see things in a vacuum, where you only see like the clean and like pristine version of how something should work. But when you see the messy version, then one, it shows that this is real and legit. People are working through the program and here's how it works. And two, it also, I think, kind of relieves some of the anxiety as a student that you have to do everything perfectly.
Because you're seeing other students not be perfect and still get the result. But,
right. Like for instance, here's a cold email that the student John sent. I would have changed this line and that line, but it still worked. So use this template.
I see. What did you do to make sure that your people were graduating and getting results? I remember that when I saw the Ramit's course, he had, and Ramit Sethi is the founder of IWillTeachYouToBeRich.com. I guess I should have said that. What he does in his, what he had at the time in his course was a button that said something like become a case study.
Yeah.
Right? What did you do?
Well, you know, here's the thing, man. We have quite a lot of case studies, but that's also because we have quite a lot of students. I think the sad truth about online courses is that most people don't finish them. Most people don't finish them. I think the numbers are something like 2%. Like, I don't know where these numbers are coming from. To be honest, we haven't actually tracked what the percentage of our success rate is. We do know that for every 1,000 students that we get, we'll get at least 100 people coming back to us and saying that the course is great, and at least 20 or 30 of those will end up being case studies that we put
in. Is it built into your CRM somehow to keep track of them? Is there something else?
We do. We have a very simple autoresponder that follows up with people, and we also have an integrated – did you know Intercom? Are you familiar with Intercom?
Yeah,
so Intercom is great because it checks to see when people are logging in and how active they are, and then it pings them and it asks them to submit forms. We use Typeform to get really like detailed data, and we get video testimonials. So
if you see someone go through every module, then they might get an email saying, can you fill out this form and tell me about your experience? That's the kind of thing.
Correct.
I see. And then does that tie into your CRM, the email software that you use?
Yeah. So it ties into Infusion, which we use to track students where they're at in the program. It also shows if they haven't logged in a few weeks, and it kind of like gives them a nudge. We just keep them engaged.
Intercom will do that?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, Intercom will do that. Intercom's getting pretty freaking cool.
I didn't know that Intercom connected to Infusionsoft that way.
Intercom is independent from Infusion, but it also is its own CRM, and it also does send out emails.
Yeah, they're almost competitors with each other.
A little bit, but I wouldn't pick one over the other. I think I need both.
You just use both. Okay. Yeah. So Intercom keeps track of where people are on the site and allows you to talk to them in real time. And Infusionsoft is what you use to send email based on what Intercom's noticing. All right.
Correct.
So you've done all this. Tell me what you've learned about doing, about being a rich 20-something, about being freelance. What's in the book? It hasn't been published yet. So I didn't get a chance to read it. Tell me.
What have I learned about being a rich 20-something?
About becoming that, about teaching people how to do it.
I've learned that, first of all, I'm going to be 29 next week. So I'm quickly exiting this lane of the 20s. And I've learned a lot, man. I think the number one thing I've learned is that I'm more excited about what's going to happen at 30. Because rich 20 is cool, and I really enjoyed my time here. But I think that what I've learned is like the rich is not just about money. There's a lot that goes into living a rich life.
What do you mean? This is basically what I'm asking is about. The book is called Rich 20-something. Right. I'm basically giving you like a softball and giving you an opportunity to talk about what's in the book as a promotion for it and also as a way of teaching some of the ideas in there.
Yeah. Okay. So well, let's talk about it this way. The first thing is if you're going to start this journey by yourself, you need to have the right mindset. And the book really talks in three main parts. It's kind of like a classic story arc. The first part is all about getting your mindset ready so that you can dive into this game with the correct outlook. So that includes how to prepare for the journey in terms of like the confusing twists and turns you're going to see. How to get your to-do list ready so that you can start being more productive. How to connect with people outside of your immediate network to start finding people who can help you. Getting all these things out of the way so that when it's time to get into the more tactical and strategic things, which are covered in like part 2 and 3 of the book, you can actually build the business without having to have some of those incremental skills building up along the way. You already have that resource. And I came to this conclusion because as I was teaching people SAT years ago, I realized that one of the main reasons why they don't do well on a test is not because they're not smart, but because they don't know a lot of the things that they need to know to get that question right.
What do you mean?
If I'm asking you a question about a right triangle, but you don't know the difference between a right isosceles and and an obtuse angle, you're not going to get that question right, even if you're smart enough to understand the concepts.
I see.
So we start the book with breaking down the games being played around us. One of those things I have is called the Three New Truths, where I talk about these three interesting ideas that are counterintuitive. One, college is dead. Okay, people don't like to hear that, and I go into why that is. The other one I talk about is you don't need to pay your dues. That sounds very inflammatory, but I have a specific take on that. And the third one is money is easy, also something very scary. So we talk about some of these mindsets, and we create a shift in that before we move into the strategies.
Why is money easy?
Well, money is easy once you have skills, or you can find people around you who can create something, and you can get those people to work on your behalf and in the behalf of a team. Right? It becomes easy once you understand what the systems are needed to make that happen.
I see. And what are the systems needed to make money be easy?
Well, I think the bottom line is you got to start with the skill. Systems come later, starts with the skill. Now, this is the way, by the way, this is my personal brand of entrepreneurship. Everyone has their own thing.
But you're saying, hey, look, if you have a skill that people want, you will get paid for it on a freelance basis. What's an example of a skill that people want?
Man,
right now?
Okay. Listen, people are, first of all, get on Final Cut Pro. You should be editing videos. You should know how to do that. If you have no skills, learn how to edit videos. Obviously, web design development is out there. But even if you're outside of the tech space, I have students who are on apps like Rover. It's called Rover. One is called Dog Vacay, where they're making like $3,000-$4,000 a month just walking dogs on the side.
That's not the kind of freelance work that you're advocating, right? We're not talking about like the. You are. You're saying as a start, you don't have to get a job. You can do one of these like Uber 4 type businesses.
Well, when I was writing the book and also when I was doing the courses, Uber was not even really as much of a thing. So I didn't even have the mechanisms to talk about that at the time. But I actually do think that they're good alternatives just to understand what it's like to have a side income. Now, your side income can be something that you create, or they do have these other services that are linked up with these apps. It's good to understand what it's like to have an income besides just your 9-to-5 job. That's something that most people with the mindset part of the book need to unlock, that if you have one stream of income, that's a problem. You need to have multiple. And I prefer that you go out and do your own thing, that you start doing web design and development, that you start personal training. I have students who are chefs.
Copywriting, et cetera. But until you get to that, you need to get comfortable with side money that is on your time and on your schedule. And so Doggy Vacay is one of those options. And about to have Postmates deliver food here. You're talking about that. All right. But that's the beginning. What's next level stuff? I've talked to your people. The thing that I notice a lot about them is that they do the kinds of stuff that go around running an online business, like web development, design, copywriting, right? So let's say they've got that skill. That's a skill they're developing. Selling that is not very easy. It doesn't come natural to people. What's your... I understand how I could learn it. I understand how someone new could learn it. What's your process for selling that skill?
Is that true that it's not easy to sell that?
You know what? I've seen some good copywriters who are kind of quiet and no one knows about them. They don't know how to reach out. They don't know how to do what you did, which is to not just go to Ramit, but to go to Ramit with a full-blown site. Not just go to Ramit, but also to recognize that Derek Halpern's out there also has a name in the space and gets credibility and so on. And so on, the Art of Charm. Right. So what's your process for them for getting freelance work?
Well, copywriting is definitely a challenge. The reason I was so confident with the copywriting is just because writing is my wheelhouse. It's always been my wheelhouse. But I think that one of the best ways you can start with a skill that's not hosted on another platform, that's your own thing, especially if it's around online business, is to have something with more of a tangible deliverable. Because with copywriting, even if it's great writing, we don't know if it converts and we don't know if it's going to work. And also it takes a lot of brain power, intellectual power to make that happen, even for a simple sales page. So I would start with something where you can immediately see the results. We know that, for instance, I'll give you a freebie right here. I put up these little videos on Instagram, and they're these meme style videos, right? Where there's like a big block of text up top and a big block on the bottom, and it attracts attention and people gravitate towards those and they get a lot of views. I can't make those on my phone. They have to get done in Final Cut Pro. So, and I'm not going to do it. Someone needs to figure that out. Someone needs to come to me and say, "Hey, Daniel, I see that these videos are doing well, and I know they're kind of a pain in the ass to make. I'll do these for you, and you need to learn how to do Final Cut Pro then." Like, there are all these skills that people need, or that people need, entrepreneurs like me need, but we don't have.
I see. You're advocating not selling the skill, but selling the result. So they wouldn't come to you and say, "Hey, do you need someone who knows Final Cut Pro?" But instead they would say, "Here's a specific thing that's working for people like you. Do you want me to make it for you too?"
Yeah. I don't care about I don't care if you use Adobe Premiere. I don't care what you use. Make the video.
I see. But here is the result. So you're saying don't go pitch copywriting. Pitch a product launch for someone's course and it would be 7 emails, or pitch product launch for someone's software based on how info marketers are selling. That's one of the tips.
So when I pitched Art of Charm, I didn't pitch copywriting. I pitched marketing, and I pitched like conversion based marketing, knowing that I was with Ramit. So there was that stamp of approval there. And then knowing that they wanted to do a product, I said, "Hey, I'll help you guys create this product and I'll launch it. And it'll be hands off, as much hands off for you as possible."
Okay, I see. By the way, one of the things I've learned about Ramit and others is that there is like a back channel where people talk about the people who they've worked with to make. So I've been on a few threads where it's, "Hey, this is a person who's coming through. He says that he's working with you. What do you say?" And it's like multiple people on there. Or, "Here's a person who's saying that he's worked with me, and technically it's true, but I actually don't think that he did good work for me. And so if he's continuously bringing up my name, be aware that I'm not vouching for him, but I can't make a guy shut up," you know? And that kind of thing, that reputation is really, it's a destroyer or a supporter of someone's career. All right. One more tip from the book that's really useful, and we'll close on that.
I'd say a final tip from the book is, are you going to talk about specifically with freelancing?
Yeah. And actually, you know what? I won't close on that. There's an issue I'm working with that I'd like to bring up to you and see if I get your feedback on it. But yeah, take me through one more tip from the book. I like the idea of sell the result, not the skill. First, get the skill, then sell the result, not the skill. What else?
Yeah. And I think another thing too is understanding who your customer is and who your client is. A lot of times beginning freelancers get frustrated when they're not getting the results they want because they're not targeting the right client. If you want to start working with clients who are going to pay you on time, who are going to be a pleasure to work with, because trust me, that's an issue. You want to have clients that you like working with. Otherwise, you're going to hate this job that you created for yourself. You have to target correctly. And that's one thing I learned too. When we were doing web design, I was thinking to myself, "Man, I want to just make as much money as possible." I soon realized that it wasn't about how much money we were making. It was about how much time we were spending with the people that we didn't like. And I distinctly remember, because I was so hungry at the time, taking like maybe an $800 job, and this guy just wanted more and more and more. So client selection is important. Make sure you have it, and this sounds very, very standard, but have your customer avatar dialed down. Who do you want to work with? Who are the people around them who are similar to them? Focus on a specific client. You don't want everybody. You're not everybody's contractor, you know?
And when it comes to avatar, I'm assuming what you're saying is just pick one person and then use them as a representative of other people like them. So I might actually say my ideal is, well, there aren't that many Derek Halperns in the world, but it might be, here's an info marketer who I know who's just getting started. That's the person I'm looking for.
Yeah, who do they respect? There's plenty of people like him. I mean, not him, but there's definitely people. I mean, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm in a different locus, but I'm like similar, you know, right. So lots of people.
Writing the book. I've been wanting to do one for a while. I don't know, where do you find the freaking time to sit down and do this? I'm recording 3 interviews standing up today. What was your process?
First of all, I will have you know, if it's not clear enough, I wrote the whole thing. And I realized that a lot of people in my industry, the entrepreneurship thing, have ghostwriters do it. It's not ghostwritten, baby. That's all, every single word. Every single word. First of all, I think that not everyone likes writing books. Not everyone likes writing.
Yeah, what was the process for writing then?
So the first thing is I went in there with absolutely no idea what I was going to write, and I was really afraid that I wouldn't be able to produce. Once we got the deal, I was like, no, I have to do something. I have to create something. So I went to Greece, and that's kind of like my my creative base. And I go there when I want to work on a project. And I went to Greece, and I was sitting there, and I'm like, okay, time to produce, time to work. And I realized that the key to me getting the book out was not editing myself while I was writing it. So I spent about 2 days in a complete malaise with no production. In the next 5 days, I dumped everything in my brain that I had on the paper. And I probably spilled maybe 30,000 words on the paper. And I'm talking no edits, misspelling, all the red squigglies on the paper, because I realized that this book was part of me. So I had to be able to just dump everything that I had in my head out there. And then once I got back to the States, I looked at everything I'd written. And I'd forgotten most of it, because it was like a matrix moment. And I looked at everything I'd written, and then I started to piece together the things that made sense, and I organized it. So I did most of this book from a large brain dump that was about 100 pages, and then I expanded it from there.
I see. And you didn't get distracted by social media and Greece and everything else around you?
Well, there was artificial time constraints. I had, you know, I was paying to be there. I didn't have much time. Why am I going to be in Greece on Instagram? What's the point?
All right.
You know?
All right. The book is in Amazon and everywhere else, and it was Penguin's imprint that published it. It's called Rich 20-Something, Ditch Your Job, Start an Epic Business, and Score the Life You Want. It's written by someone whose writing I've enjoyed, and I'm looking forward to reading the book. The two sponsors that I mentioned are the company that will help you hire your next great developer. It's called toptal.com/Mixergy, and the company that will help you book anyone with you, really, by making it easy. It's called AcuityScheduling.com/Mixergy. That's A-C-U-I-T-Y. AcuityScheduling.com/Mixergy. Daniel, congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much, my brother. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, everyone. Okay.